Vader!
What can he do? In the past 60 years, Humes have exterminated over 150 million of their own kind. No effort has been spared to reach this astronomical figure, and the methods that they have used must demand our unstinted admiration. You know, Humes began with certain very serious disadvantages, but these they overcame with wonderful ingenuity. Not having a fang or a claw, or even a whistle worth talking about, they invented guns and tanks and bombs and aeroplanes and extermination camps and poison gas and daggers and swords and bayonets and booby traps and atomic bombs and flying missiles, submarines, warships, aircraft carriers, and motor cars. They have even perfected a process whereby they can spread a lethal disease on any part of this planet. Not to say anything about nuclear power. Oh, during their short history, you know, Humes have subjected other Humes to death by burning, hanging, decapitation, strangulation, electrocution, shooting, drowning, crushing, racking, disemboweling, and other methods far, far too revolting for the delicate stomachs of this august assembly.
I never realized he was so talented.
We don't like to boast.
I second the proposal. A member of such a talented race can only be a frigate to any monster club.
Maestro, to celebrate the installation of a new member, may we hear our song.
I was waking in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble
abode. Hey there, my generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to what is sure to be an epic episode 75, right here on the Prerogative. Yes, episode 75. We have gotten to 75 episodes, and I can't be more happy. As you heard from the full showing of the audio of Epic Vincent Price, we have reached the end of our month of our epic Monster Mash. It has been fun all month long, and on this epic episode 75, for the last review of the month of October, our supernatural slash horror slash themed month, I'll let you know, it's an anime, but the anime reviewing certainly is one of the best animes that have come out in the past, I'd say 4-5 years, definitely. Not the best, but definitely one of the best. It's at the top of my list, certainly. What is it? Well, you're just gonna have to hold on to find out. Well, if you listened all the way through to last week's episode, you'll know. But, you know, I don't want to give it away just yet. In fact, when I post this up on the web, I'm gonna say one of the best animes of the past 4 years. For at least a week, until I didn't change the name. Because I want it to be a surprise. You're just going to have to listen to find out. But I'm certainly hyped and excited, as you can hear, to talk about this show. I've been watching this show constantly for the past 4 months, actually, to be quite honest. I can reveal that it recently had a second season come out. That's give you a clue, Sherlock. A clue! Though not much of a clue, because we've had certainly many animes that are second seasons that have come out this year. But I recently picked up the DVD, the Funimation dub of the first season. Get another clue there. And I've just been watching it nonstop. We're going to have so much fun. With all that being said, before we get into the review proper, I do want to kind of talk about more supernatural, more horror animation. Because again, we had a theme month. And obviously, if you've listened all the way through, which should give you another clue to what I'm probably reviewing this week, we've gone with more fun, more bodacious, more just all-out wacky type of picks as far as animation that sort of is horror-themed. You know, with Mad Monster Party, Rosario Vampire, Soul Eater, they're kooky and they're crazy, they're all a little spooky, and Tom Prerogative, da-da-da-da, ba-da-ba-ba, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. But in all seriousness, it really is like that. It's just that sort of Addams Family vibe, that monster type of vibe. You know, I actually did give thought to actually having a special review where I, like, do a review of the first 5 episodes of The Munsters, which, by the way, are on Netflix, and if you are not watching that, shame on you. But again, just what is out there animation with that is sort of horror-themed, and I thought it'd be important to sort of talk about that just for a little bit. I mean, certainly it's maybe here in America, or at least for those who listen to America. I know I have an international audience, so maybe for those in Japan, they know more in Japan, or for those in Russia and England and wherever you may be. Of course, I live in America, so for those in America, it's maybe easy to look and see, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, Coraline, The Corpse Bride, you know, the stuff by Tim Burton. Certainly, the Disney classic, The Legend of the Headless Horseman, is still a wonderful, wonderful animated short to watch. It's still a classic. A Mad Monster Party, though many people may not know of it, is certainly one that's going to constantly be on my list, and I'm constantly going to be watching every year. It's going to be my Halloween version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, to an extent. So, at least in America, it's easy to know some of the things. You know, Hotel Transylvania, which just recently came out, I actually was very surprised with how good it is. And, you know, Paranormal and Frankenweenie, just name a few. Again, all of these are probably a little bit more easier for those of the Western world to find and realize horror-themed. As far as anime is concerned, because it is all over the place, because again, I think a lot of people think of horror, especially modern horror, they think of the slasher film. They think of the more modern film. They think of the paranormal activities and the Blair Witch Project and, you know, those found documentary films. But they also think, you know, the slash, you know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer. You know, all of these, sort of these classic slasher, you know. And the horror here is more of the jump out and boom type of horror. The jump out and something's gonna get ya. And again, of course, let's not forget also the gore porn, the Saws, the I'm blanking on it, Hostel. Those type of films are just absolutely gory. Those are not really traditionally known in Japan. Japan doesn't really kind of have slashers. Japan is more of a psychological horror, especially when you look at their horror films, things like The Grudge, The Ring. It's more of your mind playing tricks to you, and when they do a sort of jump-out scare, it's very few and far between, but it works effectively because they don't do it much. And in fact, the more horrifying scenes are the scenes that you slowly watch, and they're just so disturbing. You know, as somebody who's actually seen things like more of the comedic horror films that they do, like Tokyo Gore Police and Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl, which, my God. If there's one thing to love about the Japanese, is that when the Japanese decide to cross the line. And I am specifically talking about Vampire Girl and versus Frankenstein Girl. And some people may know what I'm talking about here. When the Japanese decided to cross the goddamn line, my god, they cross the goddamn line. And yes, I'm talking about the wrist-cutting girls. I'm talking about the Obama gang. And if you... Oh my god! Please don't let Jesse Jackson Sr. or Al Sharpton ever watch that movie. Please, God! Have no one show them people that movie. We will never hear the end of it. We will go to war with Japan tomorrow. I swear to God. Oh. But it's again, a lot of you are probably saying, when are you going to get to talk about animation here, Thomas? I'm getting to that. I'm just trying to explain that's the type of stuff that usually comes out in Japan. Not that they can't do the jump out scare. But with that, it especially is reflective in this sort of more horror anime. They do a lot of more ghost stuff. You know, ghost stories, ghost hunt, ghost sweepers. It's more psychological, which all of which are good shows. You know, especially when it comes to vampires, it's not the traditional type of vampires like we have here. Again, it's more psychological. Hellsing, Trinity Blood. Of course, I'm talking about stuff that's good. Again, always you can go out there and look at it. Vampire Hunter D, Demon City Shinjuku. Though Demon City Shinjuku definitely has more of a Western vibe and sort of the jump out scare to you. But when I think of an anime that had a sort of more American feel in the fact that it was more of a type of jump out scare, I think I know the name of it. And I could be wrong. And please, I applaud people to send in mail to correct me. I believe it's called Monster. It showed once on Adult Swim. I could be wrong. It could be done by... It may have been actually done by Korea. And so I apologize, I'm blanking. I haven't been able to find it on Wikipedia. But it was this... It did get shown like on Adult Swim once. No. It wasn't called... It was called Hide and Seek. I was trying to think of the name, and I kept going back to Monster. I'm like, that's something else. I know it. It was called Hide and Seek, and it was basically these kids wear masks, and they hide, and you slowly watch this thing slowly grab the children and pull them into darkness, and it ends with all the children being pulled into darkness by this creature. Basically, these children have been sacrificed. It's this psychological jump-out and boo type of thing that was so scary. I felt really scared after watching it, so that's definitely a good one. But the shows are out there. I think it's up to you, especially when it comes to anime for people who live in the West. It's about going out there and finding the horror anime and seeing what you like. I'm just naming a few off the top of my head, but again, it's also something to where you're not going to find something like, you know, Saw or Friday the 13th as far as in anime. Because, again, a lot of the horror anime out there is more psychological. But certainly, I think horror animation across the world is very underappreciative. As much as, you know, the fact that there's a lot of the classic animes that we know and love are horror-themed. You know, Nightmare Before Christmas, and all the Tim Burton stuff for that matter. Just off the top of my head, again... But it's just, I don't think, thought of. So definitely, I really, especially in my looking at the stuff this year, as I've watched a lot of stuff this October that has been horror-themed, I definitely want you guys to go out there and check out more horror-themed animation. It's very underappreciative, I think. And a lot of it is very, very good. Especially some of the Japanese stuff is very sort of character-driven. Even things like High School of the Dead is very character-driven. So with that, let's get right into this week's review. Some of you may be on the edge of your seats, running like, well, what's the review? Because I didn't reveal it earlier. So let's get into that review, shall we? By going over our synopsis. Our synopsis starts at Cool Academy, which is a former all-girls school that has recently turned co-ed. Yahoo! The student population consists of human beings, but unknown to them, angels, fallen angels, and devils roam in secret. One of these human students is Issei Hyodo, excuse me, who is a lesser second-year student who lives there peacefully. One ordinary day, Issei is spontaneously asked out on a date by a girl named Yuma Amano. The day of their date goes wonderfully, Yuma bringing Issei to a local park after having fun shopping and eating and all the classic things you do on a date. She has a request, though, that she wants to make of Issei, a startling request. She reveals herself to be Rainier, a fallen angel, and asks for him to die, and drives a spear of light through his heart. As Issei lies there dying, his blood comes in contact with a card that he'd been given earlier by a very peculiar girl on the day of their date, and unintentionally summons Risa Gremory, a buxom third-year student at Koa Academy who revives him. Issei wakes up the next morning and thinks that the events that occurred were all but a dream, but when he's attacked again by another fallen angel, he wakes up finding that Issei not only has saved him and brought him to his room, but is in bed naked with him, which he doesn't know is a good thing or a bad thing. But while there, Issei reveals her true identity as a devil to Issei, and reveals that he has been reincarnated and is now her new student, making her his master. Ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you to High School DxD. Something that has tons of fan service. Are you really surprised? Now, I certainly hope that you didn't turn off the episode. Mainly because there is a lot to talk about, and the reason why I was kind of secretive is hoping that you'd stay around to hear, okay, he's saying a fan service. Why is this so different from the rest? Because this is a series that is so different from the rest. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that this series is probably the most perfect ecchi anime of all times. I'm really willing to go that far and say that. And I hope you'll listen to me as to why. So, in that regard, let's start off, as we always do, with music. And we're going to start off talking about the opening and ending themes, which I thought I was going to sit here and say about 24 hours ago was the best part as regards to this music. Not that all the music I didn't find wonderful, as I'm revealing now. But I thought, in hindsight, and only watching the series a couple times, or should I say 10 times, that was the best part. But in getting to rewatch it recently and listening a bit more closely to the music, and in basically going and listening to the soundtrack, that has changed. And which I'm very glad about. It's such a well-rounded feel when it comes to the music, and we'll get to all that in just a second. But let's start off with the opening and ending theme. First, the opening theme, which, by the way, the title is Trip, The Innocence of D's. Which can be taken so many ways. Performed by Larval Stage Planning. And just, again, I love the way that song opens. There's a lot of songs that I love, and a lot of them have just these great opening intros into the song, and this is one of them. And it just pumps you up with the percussion and everything, and just this sort of pop rock type of song that I very much enjoy. I love the melody of it, and I think it fits right along with the themes and the overall sort of fun feel that this anime has. And then you have the ending theme, Study X Study, which is just cheerful and pop, and it is a pop tune sung by a unit from Style Lip S. I hope I'm saying it right. And in fact, the singers of the song had some voice roles in the anime. They weren't the main cast, mind you, which, again, they did have voice actresses and as the main cast that could also sing, but they didn't go out and get singers to do the voice cast, which is another benefit. You know, there are a lot of animes where, oh, they get singers and they'll double and they'll sing the opening theme, and it's, you know, but while they can act, they can't act that well. They went out and got actors first who just so happened to sing as well as a... they'll sing later ending themes, or should say Season 2. Again, Season 2 came out this past summer. But it's just this fun, poppy song. And then with the animation that is paired with the twins. How I love twins. I love these so much. The twin synchronized pole dancing card-themed ending. It's so much fun to watch. Again, one of those endings where, again, and the music good too. It's not just the theme. The music matches what's going on screen, and it works perfectly, and it creates this point to where, yeah, I'm watching this anime all the way through the ending theme, through to the preview, because it's so much fun to watch. It never gets tiresome. It really doesn't. But yeah, it's just this very fun, cheerful little song that fits. It is, to an extent, very typical of a ecchi type of series to have this type of sort of fun song as the ending. But it just works so well, because it's one of the things that this anime does well. It knows everything that it is and says, fuck it. You know what? We know who we are. We're not going to hide from who we are. We're going to be who we are. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And I love that of that, by the way. So, with that, we go to the actual score itself. This is the part that, in recent days, and especially in the past 24 hours, and getting to listen to the soundtrack, I found myself so surprised. Because I knew the music was good, and the, like, 10 times I've seen this series in the past 4 months. That being said, I just didn't know how good until I actually got to listen to the soundtrack. There's a lot of great tunes, you know. I'm a Princess, you know, Risa's theme is just a wonderful melody. You know, Issa's theme is also just fun to listen to. But part of it comes from the fact that, you know, I can break sort of the score of the series into four individual parts, all that are important. And that's something I can't say about a lot of animes, including ones I like, that the score is, while simple, is complex. All the music is simple and works very, very well and is fun to listen to, but it's complex because there's different parts to it. You know, this set of music right here is sort of for fun scenes. You got this set of music right here that's for the dramatic scenes. You got this group of music that is very different from the rest of the music that's for action scenes, and you got the individual character themes. You know, there are different parts that add a complexity to it, to the way it blends. Now, with that being said, I'm going to start off by saying that all of the music that's in the series, that's everything that I want music of a score to do. And that's part of the reason why I was so surprised when I actually sat down and listened and saw, or should say, heard, how good the music was. Because I knew the music was good, but it did what music, or should say, good music is supposed to do. It was there. It lent itself to the animation. It was in the background, but it didn't overpower the scene, and in turn, enhanced the scenes. And I knew it was doing it. Again, I just didn't know how good the music was. And that's the thing here. So, right off the bat, the score, all of the score, did everything I want music. This, to an extent, is what a score is perfectly supposed to do for an anime. That being said, I mean, I'm going to start off with the fun music. Just fun and poppy, and this is the music that's used during the fan service scenes and sort of the fun sort of comedy scenes, and it's certainly comedy music, but it's just fun, poppy, and a lot of use of percussion. And that's the thing, is that all these different sort of areas use different music types, in fact. And a lot of the use of percussion, sort of more of the tonal percussion, the xylophones, steel drums, type of percussion like that. And sort of like the, I can't believe I'm blanking. Not the cowbell, though there's cowbell there, but the ziggy thing. And I'm blanking on the name of the instrument, I can't, but the one that goes, to create all these sort of textures within the music. That's actually very interesting to hear. Sort of soft, I wouldn't say soft, but cheerful and poppy piano. The high end of the piano, but sort of more playful and cheerful with it. It's just a joy to listen to. Again, enhances these comedy scenes wonderfully. Then you have the individual character themes. You have sort of this almost sort of Romanov type of Eastern Russia, Romania type of theme for Risa, or Rise, that's just wonderful. Issei's theme is just playful. You know what? It's, to put it away, it's lecherous. It works perfectly for him. You know, the sort of innocence of Asa's theme, the very mascot feel of Konoko's theme, which worked perfectly, and again, it lends itself to these characters. It's one of those things to where these character themes do a wonderful job of telling you the mood and sort of the personality of the characters. And this is actually, as I'm going to get to when I get to animation, is part of what makes the character designs work so well, is the personality that the voice actors, along with the character themes themselves, lend to the characters, really make the characters feel fresh. It's an amazing thing to listen to. You know, Kiba's sort of piano type of theme, that type of like host club type of piano that worked very well for him. The sort of sensual jazz theme of I really should get the names right here, of Ikeno, just works wonderfully. And then from there you have the more dramatic scenes, and here it's more orchestra, and it's not a big orchestra. It's sort of middle, small orchestra, but it's a more Western approach, but not like American Western, to where you hear a lot of brass. This is, sort of, again, Eastern Russia, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Russia. I said Eastern Russia. I meant West Russia, Eastern Europe type of feel. I mean, we're talking about the type of music that's influenced by, you know, the Czech Republic and Poland and Romania, and sort of where sort of classic music was born, because it's a lot more use of the violins. The winds have more importance here. The brass is not a big thing in the orchestra here. In fact, brass is really not heard that much. It's more of an enhancement to the song, and there's not a lot of big trumpets, big trombone. Again, like you might hear in more of a American orchestra. If you listen to more of an American orchestra, you'll hear a lot more brass. You'll hear the trumpets having much more of a presence, along with the trombones and everything. Again, more of a marching band type of orchestra feel is definitely an influence of an American orchestra music. Whereas in Europe, again, it's the violins, the fiddles, the basses, and the winds, the oboes, the flutes, and I can't believe I'm blanking on other wind instrument names. But I think you got my point. So those are definitely a more dramatic feel. And again, the music having that feel of Eastern Europe, especially with the religious themes that they play with, playing with a lot of Judeo-Christianic themes, you definitely feel like that area of the world being a main influence on the music, and it works perfectly. The music here is great, and it's grand, and it's wonderful. Then you have sort of the action scenes, which upon themselves are vastly different, because they're more modern. To put it in a way, if you've ever heard the Black Mages, which is Noboru Uematsu's band that he has that will a lot of times play Final Fantasy music, it's like that. It's like a band like that playing something like the Final Fantasy VII battle theme, to put it away. It just has this more modern feel, and I mean, it feels like a band is playing, but at the same point in time, there's some modern attributes, there's a synthesizer, things like that, that make it vastly different. And, you know, in going back and watching the fight scenes after listening to it, works so well. And it's just one of those things that it really does enhance the scenes. It gives us this very unique feel to the fight scenes that make them different from the rest of what's going on in the series. Same with the more dramatic, you know, you have dramatic scenes that are vastly different from the fighting and sort of the more playful and comedy scenes. It's not just that, well, they're different scenes, so of course they're, but the music lends itself to it. Again, this complexity that is there, that is just wonderful to listen to. I mean, look at it this way. I've been talking about music, I think, for almost 20 minutes now. That's how complex and how unique and how wonderful the music is in this series. So it's just a joy to listen to. Again, like I said before, it does everything I need music to do in the series. I mean, as good as this music is, if it overpowered any scene in this series, it wouldn't be as good, but it doesn't. It's there, it enhances the scenes, it never overpowers. It's a perfect score to me. I look forward to listening to the CD again, and just listening to the background stuff, because it's so wonderful, and I really do suggest you go and check out some of this music, because it is really good. With that, let's move on to animation. And let's start off with the overall art. And again, it's this very modern anime feel to it. Very much along the lines, again, looking at some of the original illustrations that High School DxD is based off of, because, again, to put a little background, this isn't based off a manga or a game or anything. This is based off a light novel. Now, light novels are series that are, again, they're novels. They're not like a manga where it's pictures. There are a couple pictures, but it's text. It's words. It's like a novel. But, again, it has pictures. And looking at the designs that the original artist, writer had, Ishibumi, and it was illustrated by Miyami Zero, they definitely fit Miyama's illustrations. That being said, again, the art is just wonderful, overall. The animation just has a fluidity to it. It's crisp. It's nice. The use of bold lines are done wonderfully here. The color scheme is wonderful. All the different colors, to the point that it's very easy to see what's going on in the dark. And just the different color schemes it lends to. It allows the anime to be in the same place and yet feel different at the same time. You know, considering different places in the series, you know, they're in one place and yet it feels different. The crisp, bright colors definitely lend itself to the more colorful, comedic scenes that are filled with fan service and the like. The dramatic scenes having more darker hues allow them to play perfectly. It's just wonderful to look at. With that, let's go on to character design. The character designs are just wonderful because there's a freshness to it. And they're not doing anything really that different. But again, it's another thing of keeping it simple and allowing the character designs on themselves to have a fresh feel to them. Feels so unique. I really can't think of another main heroine that really has the same feel as she does. It definitely feels like a very unique character design with the long red hair, the body type, all of it feels wonderful. The school outfit feels very different from sort of the very typical sort of Japanese school outfit you would see, with the sort of striped lines and everything, and sort of the ruffles, giving it a more international feel to the overall school outfit. That works very well. Issei, despite to an extent being the very sort of typical sort of perverted guy design, works wonderfully. Akino's design is just wonderful, and I love the way the hair and sort of the points of the hair and the more angular fashions there in the ponytail. It's to an extent the typical Japanese beauty, but has bits and pieces that make it feel crisp and fresh. That make it feel unique. The same with Kaneko and Asa and Kiba. They are all to an extent typical designs, but there's a freshness and a crispness to them. And again, part of that lends itself to, again, the themes from the music, and again, the personalities, the story, and the acting for those characters that help allow these character designs to feel crisp and fresh and unique. Sometimes that's something that's needed to make a character design feel fresh. You can't just design a character and have it work. Because to an extent, most designs have already been done. It's about what's added to those designs in the form of the acting and in the form of the music that make those characters feel fresh. And that's just something definitely with all these character designs. But even without it, there's still a sort of fresh and Christmas to it. Something unique to where you can look at any of these designs and you definitely know what anime this comes from. Not just because of the fan service, but just from the design work. Because it is something that's vastly different from a lot of the stuff that's out there. As far as the typical cast in a harem and... I mean, each of the characters have unique features that make them feel unique, that make all of the characters just feel fresh. with that, let's move on to the action animation. There's not just fan service. Though maybe that's something we should also talk about, the fan service animation. The fan service animation is wonderful, and I love it. There. I mean, it's gorgeous. They really, like, okay, we're going to show fan service. We're going to show fan service. We're going to show boobies. And boy, do they show boobies. And I thank them for it. It's a beautiful thing to watch. They really make, again, a lot of the fans, they don't really show real fan service, but again, a lot of the fan service here in the form of, you know, female body, they really make the female body look just absolutely gorgeous and beautiful. But with the action anime, because there's a fair amount of action in this anime, and it's just unique and different ideas to portray action. I mean, it's fairly typical the way they portray action, but I'm talking more of the techniques that they come up with, like sword birth and that stuff, which really lends itself to the action scenes being very unique and fun to watch. But it's crisp, it's fluid, you can follow the action wonderfully. It's just a wonderful thing to watch. You have the backgrounds and the special effects, and again, a lot of it just taking place on the school grounds. Yet, again, the way they change colors and everything, making different places, or such the same places that you've been in, feel different times you go to it, just makes it feel unique. And again, the special effects, from like the magical circles to, which have a sort of CD, and in this case, the sort of glossy feel make the circles feel magical to it. And the overall special effects just done extremely well. The animation, like I said, it's fluid, it's crisp. Their character designs just feel fresh. The colors pop off the screen and everything. And like I said, the fan service animation is just incredible. The bounce of the boobies, the way the boobies move, it's for somebody who is an ecchi fan like me, it's perfect. And again, it's not to sit here and say that fan service is the only thing about this anime, but at the same point in time, fan service is a huge part of this anime, and it doesn't try to hide from that. And again, I like that. Again, we'll get more into that when we get into story, but it's just wonderful to listen to. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a couple promos for some of my friends. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So we'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be
right back. The Phantom Zone, home of Krypton's worst criminals. But what would happen if they escaped and found themselves on a planet whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave them fantastic superpowers? Especially when they also put Superman in the Phantom Zone in the process. Find out starting October 9th when I, Charlie Niemeyer, cover all 4 issues of the Phantom Zone miniseries in a special crossover between my 2 shows, Superman of the Bronze Age and Charlie's Geekcast. It's Kryptonian criminals versus the world's greatest superheroes, while Superman tries to get back to Earth. All this October at SupermanOfTheBronzeAge.com, CharliesGeekCast.com, and SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. From there, you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting, which of course means it's time to go over our cast list. Of course, this is the English dub, though I will say this, as I talk about acting here, I am going to be mentioning some of the Japanese cast. But we start with our English dub cast. Scott Freeman as Issei Hyodo, Jamie Marchi as Rias Gremory, Terry Rogers as Akino Himajima, Chloe Daniels, as Asa Argento, Jade Saxon as Konoko Tojo, Sean O'Connor as Yuto Kiba, Felicia, and I hope I pronounce this right, Angela, as Lady Rainier. That's the first villain in the series. And then Chris Smith as Riser Phoenix, who is the second villain in the season. I said series, but and technically she is the first villain of the series, but Riser Phoenix, second villain of the series and of this season. I absolutely am growing on the cast, is the best way I can put it. Because, again, I had actually watched this so many times listening to the Japanese dub cast, which I thought was just excellent. I mean, Yuki Kaji, who played Issei, was just hilarious. Yoko Hikasa, who played Rias Gremory, I thought did an absolute fantastic job with the elegance. So for some of the dub cast, they had to grow on me, because again, it is that thing of, after listening to it in the Japanese so many times, and the way they're going to do stuff in Japan is different from what they're going to be doing in the English dub a lot of times. Though, at the same time, they do keep it, for the most part, the same. I mean, like, Konoko is kept to be a mostly monotone, sort of flat character. Yuto is pretty much kept the same way he is, though there's some... It's mostly, I guess, choice of language. Like, there are some times where there's some, like, hipster language put in there. Hipster language always... like, go, but it wasn't used too much, and it didn't detract from my enjoyment. Same point in time, again, a lot of these characters, while some of them have a fair amount of lines, don't have really any stories that surround them, and they won't until the second season, at least for Yuto and for Akino. Akino, I think, was the one that I had to grow on the most. Terry Rogers did a great job, especially in the beginning. I think it's towards the later, again, they gave her some lines that were kind of very Valley Girl to an extent. And I guess that fits the American way of doing what they did in Japan with that character. But I had to grow on that, because it's like, oh god, are we really having Valley Girl speak? And it's like, you know, it's really not that bad. And in all honesty, Terry Rogers did a wonderful job as Akino through the series. And really, for the most part, was the sort of elegance that Akino's voice actress in Japan, which is Shinzuka Ito, absolutely had. So her voice had to grow on me. But after listening to it a few times, I thought she did an absolutely wonderful job. And honestly, she is spot on for sort of the personality and sort of the way they were going for Akino from the Japanese version. Jamie Marchi was the one I didn't have to grow on the most, because she was absolutely perfect. She captured the elegance, the essence of everything that Rias was from the Japanese perfectly and wonderfully. It's like, wow, they really did a great job of translating Rias from the Japanese to the English. And Scott Freeman, again, a more American idea of sort of that same sort of pervert that Issei is. But my god, he is hilarious in this series. And if you want to talk about hilarious, listen to the commentary. If you had the Blu-ray DVD, there's two commentaries, the first episode and the seventh episode. The first episode is Jamie Marchi with Terry Rogers and Felicia Angela, who plays Lady Rainier. They have their commentary. But then the seventh one is Scott Freeman, Joey Daniels, and I'm going to look it up here in a second, but the voice actor for, I want to say it's Motohama, one of Issei's friends, and my god, it's one of the most hilarious things you will ever hear. I was literally rolling around on the ground laughing. It was so funny. But again, him talking about the character and everything. But like I said, he did a wonderful job of just bringing out the absolute sort of perverted insanity that Issei is, which I really much enjoyed. And I thought, like I said, I thought all the characters do. Again, it was mostly some of the dialogue choices that left me, how I should say, to put it in a way. By the way, it was Tyson Reinhart who played Matsuda. Hilarious, by the way. But no, it was... It's just like... please don't put hipster speak. You don't need to put hipster speak to be funny. And it wasn't there to be funny. It was just to be different. And like I said, it grew on me. But I thought... to go back... Sean O'Connor did a great job as Yuto. I actually can't wait to hear him. Because, again, going to what the second season is, I know that the very first arc has a lot of focus on Kiba. So, it's going to be interesting to see how Sean progresses the character from there. Same for Terry Rogers. Her character, Akino, is going to have a lot more sort of progression in the second season. So I think that's really the tipping point for those characters, is they were good. There's some of their dialogue choices. Again, this goes to the writers, really. I don't think fit well, though I think that's maybe because I prefer the more of the elegance and not Valley speak that the Japanese had. But they performed it well. They hit the character spot on. They hit the personality spot on for the characters. And I think really the tipping point in these cases is going to be the second season. But Scott Freeman, Jamie Marchi are just, they play their characters perfectly. It's wonderful to watch. And then, of course, you have our antagonists. And both of them do great jobs. I mean, by the way, I should not fail to mention that this is one of Terry Rogers' first roles. And the same could be said for Alicia Angela. And again, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Who voices Lady Rainier. I think they may have done some other stuff. But like, this is like their first group of stuff that they're doing for Funimation. To the point to where I tried to look up Terry Rogers on IDBM. She's not on there. She doesn't have a list of roles yet. That's how few roles she's done for Funimation. So, yeah, it's just... but Felicia Angelic did a great job as Lady Rhaenyra. Again, these split personalities playing Yuna at the beginning and Sweet. And definitely her best performance is in that first episode where she slowly has to change her voice to that more menacing sort of other personality. And it's just a great scene to watch. Because again, if you're watching this and you have no idea what this series is about, you think, oh, it's just sort of simple love, and it plays very much like a sort of etchy harem series would start out, and then it takes that turn at the park, and it relies all on whoever the voice actress for Rhaenyra is to perform that part well, and Felicia just nails that part, and it makes you completely believe in this world that you start watching. So she just nailed it, and she was did a great job playing the villainess in the first arc. And then you have Chris Smith as Riser Phoenix, who's the main villain in the second arc. That sort of Riser Phoenix is best. Riser Phoenix talks in third person. Riser Phoenix is grand. Riser Phoenix wants a word with his bride. The way he talked, he nailed it, because that is completely how Riser Phoenix was in the Japanese version, and they really brought it over here to great fashion. Chris Smith's voice was perfect. It had the right sort of grandiose in the voice that was wonderful, the character, and like I said, he nailed all the acting parts. So the acting here is just spot on and wonderful. They could have just taking it completely goofy. Which, by the way, that's what Scott Friedman talks about in the commentaries. Like, I want to be geeky and goofy, because that's how the series starts off, and then it gets serious, and I actually have to act. Which, by the way, those commentaries, I might add, and I'm bringing them up here since we have acting, and we're talking about the actors. One, apparently never buy Jamie Marchie a scrunchie. She will kill you. That's the joke, by the way, between all the girls, is that apparently the reason Rhaenyra killed Issei is because he bought her a scrunchie. See, this is why guys can't buy anything for girls. There was something from episode 7 that I wanted to remember, and I completely blanked on it. But thinking there was a lot of funny stuff in episode 7. So I will say this. Episode 7, I appreciate a good nut shot. We'll get to that, though. Speaking of getting to that, let's move on to story. And the very first thing we're going to talk about when we talk about story is we're going to talk about really the key aspect of the story that makes everything work here. Before we get into themes, before we get into the arc, before we even get into the comedy, the one thing that this series does so well that really differentiates it from really other animes, and I'm not just talking about ecchi harem animes, I'm talking about many animes that have come out over the past couple years and over the past 10 years, is this anime sits its characters down and allows you to know the characters, to understand the characters, for the characters themselves to care about each other, to fall in love, to form friendships, and in turn for you to form a quasi sort of viewer character relationship of friendship and love and that stuff with the characters. Several places. The very first, of course, moment of this is a moment that a lot of people would look at as just fan service. I want to say at the beginning of episode 2 where, you know, Rias is sitting there with Issei and just talking with him, you know, talking about what has happened to him, what he's become. Mind you, she's standing there naked. Now, a lot of people look at it as, oh, it's just showing fan service. But again, going back to the very unique sort of camera angles and sort of way camera perspectives that they would use, actually, the content of that is sort of to show the master servant relationship. You know, it's Issei the one covering her up, but Rias is there proud of who she is, not covering up, not ashamed of her body, not ashamed of everything. In that sense, showing that she's, you know, the more mature one, and she is the master at that moment. And of course, this, mind you, will change as the series will go along to an extent. But again, showing a great moment of being something more than just a fan service moment, of being a moment for a master to sort of show her dominance is a strong word here, because it's not in the sense of dominance, but sort of a master showing why she is the master, why she's the leader for him to follow, is, I think, more of an appropriate term, because it is more of a sort of leader that he is still, to an extent, choosing to follow, though he is now in a master-servant relationship. But that's just one aspect of it. This happens again in episode 4 when you have the little date with Asa and Issei. And, of course, in episode 9, when Issei and Rias are having another talk as the rating game is coming up, what this anime does and what the writers have done here is that they've sat the characters down and, like I said, given them a chance, in especially these two cases, for them to form friendship that will eventually be love. Or should I say, the friendship that Issei is giving them creates deeper feelings that down the line will turn to love for the female characters and for Issei as well. For Asia, for Rias, for Issei. It allows that moment for these characters to care about their plight, care about their suffering that each other is going through, especially in that episode 4 one between Asa and Ias. Just this great moment of them going on a date, enjoying each other's company, becoming friends. Him making, you know, there's nothing perverted here. There's no fan service. There's no nothing. It's just great character drama, great character development of the characters getting to know each other and this friendship forming that, like I said, turns to love later on. But you understand it turning to love because of this friendship that is built there. These are foundations of which these characters are built upon for their relationship with each other to bloom and be believable. Along with the acts that they perform later being believable. Of them, of Issei and Kiba and Kaneko going to the Fallen Angels church to fight Lady Reyna and the Fallen Angels. Of, you know, them fighting as hard as they do in the rating game and such. And again, like I said, speaking of the rating game, that episode 9 one, a lot of people, again, look at it as fan service, especially a particular moment where they cut to a scene where the moonlight is cutting through the dress, making it see-through. A lot of people will sit there and say, oh, well, there's a fan service moment of it. Except that fan service is not there just to be comedy, you know. What we may look at as fan service in this case is really an act of elegance and beauty here that is complementary to the mood that the scene is setting. There is this very somber mood where, you know, Issei is, again, Issei and Rias are building this bond through this talk of understanding each other's strife, you know, leading to, again, Issei breaking down and crying because he wants to be stronger. There's nothing perverted about this scene. He's not wanting to be stronger because, oh, if I become stronger, I may get with Rias. He wants to be stronger because he cares for her, because he is friend first. Forget all the sort of sex and romance that might go through his mind. He is a friend first, and he cares about her deeply. And that caring, you can see, deeply affects Rias. Her making the promise that I will show you that you can be stronger, and I show you just how strong you are. I promise. You know, those tight knits of sort of very human compassion and human qualities that make these characters stronger. And that's something that really very few animes do. Again, all because they sit these characters down and they have them talk with each other. There's no comedy. There's no drama. There's no, I mean, the drama is natural from the plot that they are in and the plight that they're in, but it is these very grand character moments that allow these characters to befriend each other and fall in love with each other, and it is really the strength and the glue that holds this series together. That, you know, that moves certainly into the second point, which, again, the themes. And the real big major theme here is a very common one to sort of adventure series. The act of becoming more than not just what you, but society deems you to be able to do. To be more powerful than you are. To grow stronger. You know, we don't just see this with Issei, but with Asa and with Rias, and we'll see this, of course, in later seasons, but again, we're not quite there yet. But again, it is a theme that will continue through this series. It is a central theme to this series, at least, I guess, for the first couple of books, but I have a feeling it is going to be a common thing throughout the series, of being more than you can. Certainly, this is always going to be followed with Issei. You know, again, being human, but he has the gear. The boost gear. Is the boost gear what makes him powerful, or is it what's in his heart, his drive, is everything that makes him more powerful? This is where also him being a pervert and all of this fan service comes into play. You know, again, he is looked upon as a pervert, a charlatan, someone who needs to be beat within an inch of his life because he does something that society deems is nasty and perverted and wrong. Again, I'm not going to get into the, political and agendaness here of discussing that, but in this case, this is what's being used to show him in a place where he has a certain point in society. Him building himself up, him making himself stronger through deeds and acts that you see on the screen that make you care about him, care about his plight, and cheer for him to be stronger, to be better than what others deem him to be. Which is a very central American theme. It's a very central human theme. To be better and to be stronger and to prove others wrong. It's a central act to what makes this character of Issei likable and lovable. And while you laugh with him, you laugh at him, but at the end of the day, you're always cheering for him. And the same could be said for Asa and Rias. Asa, again, nothing politically agendaness saying here, but again, using the sort of very well-known plight of women in the nunnery and sort of their place in the church. And again, the church wanted her to be a symbol and a symbol until she did something that they didn't like in casting her out and her wanting to make friends, to sort of bring the sort of love and understanding that God has taught her to a populace of all types of people, not just those the church has deemed as savable, and wanting to prove that to the point to where she's willing to become a devil to become that. And Rias being a character to want to prove her leadership, her dominance in the devil world, especially when, you know, her brother is Lucifer, Satan himself. Her father is this almighty powerful devil. And here comes Riser Phoenix, who she has been promised to be wed and is his betrothed for many, many years. And her preventing that from happening is part of her proving herself as a leader, proving in her strength and her place among devil kind. And again, Riser seeing her as just an object, and that's another thing I like about this, is that's one aspect that really separates Issei from being a hero and Riser being a villain, is that, yes, Issei is a bit perverted, but his perversions are always in the context of love and caring, and seeing women as beautiful creatures because he sees them as equals, and he's, and for that matter, better than him. That's why he idolizes women, because he sees them as better than him and beautiful and equals. Whereas Riser sees them as objects, as seen with Rias. He sees her as an object, something to add to his own greatness. Again, another reason why you're cheering for Rias and her beating him and standing up for him. A lot of people are going to see her losing initially, and Issei having to come save her as, well, why is that? But the fact that she takes, you know, to an extent, Lucifer says it in that final episode, Rias and her group, who were outnumbered in the raiding game, take them to the limit. Take them to the brink of losing. And in fact, it really just came down to him and his Bond Queen versus three. And they had to use their Phoenix Tears and everything in the series. They have Phoenix Tears, which can heal all injuries. They're only allowed to use three in the game, but the Bomb Queen is forced to use one to defeat Akino. But again, they're standing up and they're holding their ground, and it's only when it seems like Issei is about to die, again, that caring for him, that Rias gives up. She gives up. She is willing to allow herself to be betrothed and married somebody she absolutely despises to save him because she loves him. And again, those themes of being something more and the willing sacrifice to be that. That is the sign of a great woman. That's the sign of a great leader that you see there. It shows her becoming something more than she is. So it's not just a focus on Issei. It's also focused on other characters. And in the second season, that's going to become more evident. Because that is still going to be a central theme throughout this series. And it's a great central theme. And then, really, the other theme is more of a mythological sort of background theme. The mythological Christianity idea of heaven and hell and the fallen angels. This being sort of the starting backdrop for this series is, I find, very interesting because it's not a commonly played with theme. Though I think it's gotten a bit more play in recent years. But definitely not a common. They will branch out to other theologies as the book has gone along. So I certainly hope if more anime seasons are made, you'll show more branching out theologies. But it's a lightly played theme. But it is a theme because, again, there's a sort of central international sort of thing that can be connected here with viewers of many nations that make it a very well sought out, very well viewed anime. And then, of course, you have the plot itself and the fact that it is split into two parts, and this brings in the pace. The pace of this anime is just absolutely incredible. It's absolutely spectacular. And part of that comes from, again, the plot here. Again, the central plot for this series is Rias and her group of devils. And her, of course, her pawn, Issei. And, of course, they have those themes that they're playing with, but they're played along these two arcs. The first arc being the Lady Reyna and Issei overcoming Lady Reyna and the fallen angels, to an extent proving himself to be earning of that devil status, and then Rias proving that she's better than Riser Phoenix in the raiding game. Again, the pace is well done, using the 2-2-2 format of the two episodes at the beginning arc to sort of introduce everybody, or introduce the setup. The two episodes in the middle are sort of the main body of work, and then two episodes for the conclusion. Though it's probably more five episodes for the second arc, because being that they don't have to really introduce anybody, because they already did that in the very first episode, it allows them to have a very fun filler episode that really is, though, a setup for the Riser Phoenix arc. But again, the pace here is just extremely well done. And again, just the way the episodes are split up, and again, that allows for those moments where they can sit the characters down and talk with each other and get to know each other. It allows for the action to flow well. The action never feels rushed, but it never feels too long. That perfect pace to it, and allows the plot to fill out nicely as they build towards the climax. You understand characters' motives, and you understand what's going on, and allows you to care for characters and what's happening. So I thought that's a central aspect that also made this series good, is the fact that they split two different plots up, shared them between the same number of episodes, and had a steady pace between them. And again, these plots are very simple, straightforward. Is here is the villain that they have to defeat, the object that is in their way, and them becoming stronger to overcome them. Very simple in its plot. But again, and while it's also a plot that's been done before, that's what makes it good. It's simple. They know what they're doing, and they don't try to be anything else. They remain simple and just tell the best story they can. And they tell a pretty good story that's fun to watch. That's what makes it great. I say it over and over and over again. Be simple. Just tell a great story. You don't need to be complicated like other series are. It's why I love this series. And then last but not least, you have the animation. You have the comedy. I don't know where I was going with that. But the comedy here, again, the comedy is funny. As a ecchi fan service fan, it's great ecchi. Tons of boobage. And again, the fact that they're not shy about showing it fills my heart with glee. But it also, I think, lends itself to them saying, look, we know what we are. We're not going to be ashamed of it. And that's what makes people love it. There are series that seem like they're ashamed that they're showing ecchi stuff. And it doesn't allow people to really accept it as comedy. Here it does. You know, when you have these funny moments, they're genuinely funny. Perfect example, episode 7, when they're looking for a familiar. You know, again, the green slime comes down and starts eating the girl's clothes. A common ecchi fan service trope. But, you know, just, again, and this goes to great acting and everything. But I'm like, oh my god, I love this slime. I love this slime. Miss Reyes, I want the slime as my familiar. The way that joke is built up, it works so well. And same episode. The dual nut shots, the way that joke sets it up, to where having this dodgeball game, literally from hell, and in the middle of it, there's this homing dodgeball that gets Issei right in the nuts. Which leads to Issei wanting to heal him, and it's like, no, I'm not letting you anywhere near that. And the double entendres that happen. And then to really cap off the joke, Kaneko then hits the other male pawn from the other team right in the nuts. It was a perfect complimentary of jokes. And mind you, the comedy is very much like that throughout the series. There's definitely ecchi fan service that is comedic in times. But at the same point in time, there's also an elegance to it in certain places that lends itself to the mood, lends itself to the beauty, to where it's not just there to say, oh, look at the boobies. It's fitting the theme. It's fitting the mood. And that's something I very much like about it. But the comedy, you know, like I said, there's nutshots, there's double entendre, there's tons of stuff that just makes it fun. And the thing that it does to this, that it brings sort of lightheartedness that allows for some of the more serious and sort of the twists that happen, like Reyes losing. It makes you care about those scenes a whole lot more, because again, you know, you're sort of seeing this group having fun with each other and be a family. Because this is sort of the natural aspect of a quasi-family like this. And so it helps you get to know these characters. And like I said, care about these characters. So again, you once again, it provides, the comedy provides an attribution for you to care about the characters' plight. So at the end of the day, this is another great anime to where the strongest aspect of this series is its story. But it has great complementary pieces in its acting, and its animation, and its music that never overpowers the story, but enhances the story and makes it so grand. And there are very few animes I can sit there and say that I have watched over and over again to the ability that I have with this series. I mean, there are series I've loved, and their series, and this includes ecchi fan series, that I have watched over and over again. But there are very few series to where I love them so much that I watch them over and over again, and every time I watch it, I always see something new, and I always have fun watching it. And in fact, that's part of the reason I want to watch it over and over again, because it's so fun over and over and over again, and it never gets tiresome. There are series that I enjoy watching over and over, but I'll skip over an episode. But here, you know, I don't want to skip over any episode. I don't even want to skip through the opening or ending theme. Everything about this series is just such a joy to watch. And that's a very short list that includes things like Outlaw Star and Gundam Wing. Even though I haven't reviewed it yet, but Cowboy Bebop. It part of that short list, just off the top of my head, that I put this series right up there as a series I personally love to watch. As for other people, definitely Etchy fans are going to enjoy it. Harem fans are going to enjoy it. I think anybody who enjoys a good action-adventure story will enjoy it. And I think sort of central anime fans who understand what anime is about, and anybody who will really enjoy a good story, will enjoy this. Unfortunately, this is an anime that will fall into that category of animes that a large majority might not watch because of the sort of political agendas that go through, or that is going through fandom in regards to ecchi fan service. And there's a lot of people that, because of that and sort of the politics behind that, that won't watch this series. It's very unfortunate, because I think there's a lot of people that would enjoy this that will never see it because of those reasons. But at the end of the day, this is just a solid, solid series with a wonderful story, great music, great animation, great acting that lends itself to enhancing the story and making it so much fun to watch. At the end of the day, High School DxD gets a 5 out of 5 for me. So, that's it. That's my review. I hope you enjoyed it. And again, like I said, get the DVD because there's some great commentary on there. And mind you, also, I would highly suggest listening to the Japanese version, which you could probably listen to by watching it on Hulu for free right now, because the Japanese cast, like I said before, was absolutely incredible as well. And it's just, it lends itself, and it's like, I watched the two different versions, and they're the same story, but they're very complimentary of the, because of the dub and because of the sub, of which country, and the jokes work very well in either side. That being said, if you have any comments about this episode, anything you want to let me know, say that I was wrong about, or whatever, any fan mail, hate mail, whichever you want to say, or just tell me how I'm doing with the show. Trust me, I really want to know from people how I'm doing from the show. Remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. You can contact the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find at www.facebook.com. Go there and search for the Absolution Network. Find us and leave us a comment on our webpage, or on our Facebook page, I should say. And speaking of our webpage, you can always leave a comment on the posts of the audio itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. Of course, Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my other podcasting ventures, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network that features Comic Book Crazy, and Hexcast, the only podcast that reviews every issue of Jim Baylin's Terror, Witch of the Black Rose, that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. You can, of course, find them, like Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box. And, of course, from Crisis to Crisis, this was a good friend, Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course Scott Gardner's Two Freaks, along with many more on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we're going to have a very special episode. We've gone past 75 episodes. I think it's time for a look back. So I'm going to have a slight look back at all that I've done, how far I've come. Of course, later in the month, I will have the epic anniversary podcast that I recorded near the end of September. I'll finally be able to get that out. I promise I will. But, you know, since I'm taking a look back, I think, you know what? Let's not only watch an anime that is taking a look back, but also let's take a view of an animation that is, to an extent, the future of animation, as we'll maybe soon know it. And a future of animation to where fans can make their own animation, maybe through game capturing. Maybe that should give you a clue, because next week we're going to be reviewing Red vs. Blue, the Red vs. Blue Award Movie Special. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The positive had just begun. The death included Wolfgang, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kickers Five.
They make a mash.
They came a monster mash.
So what's a mash?
It was a graveyard smash.
They came a mash.
Caught on in a flash.
They made a mash.
They made the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drax's voice did ring. It seems he was troubled by just one thing. He opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvanian twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band, and might of the band. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Vincent sent you.
Monster mash.
Now you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
It caught on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Now you can monster mash. Do the monster mash, it won't hurt, I promise.